I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, and that is a clip from the stage production of 1776 from the Edge Theater. And we're very excited to welcome in studio. We have Orion. I apologize. You know, having a station has Orion as you know, one of our icons, yes, and legends here. It's Orion,
like the constellation.
Is it spelled the same way?
Yeah,
Orion,
it is.
And Orion. Yeah. All right. So
just to trick you up.
I know. It was a little bit of a... Well, Alexandra.
Oh, there you go.
Hi. Alexandra and Orion are in studio with us. Orion is the artistic director and producer and also has a role in this production.
Yeah, a nice small part.
A nice, well, 16 lines is what you were telling
16
me.
Lines.
And Alexandra Cross plays Edward Rutledge in
That's
17.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm all tongue-tied. Nate Weatherup and Adam Selzer join us in studio as well. Have you guys seen 1776 in any form? Because I recently just saw the movie with myself.
I've seen the movie.
Yes.
Am I still here? All right.
Yes.
Is it based off the David McCullough book?
Well, yeah, pretty much.
Okay, yeah. I've read the book.
Well, there you go. We all know each other.
Well, here, so let's tell people a little bit about, well, one, the play is about deciding to declare independence.
Yeah.
And the battle, the arguments that ensue between the colonies, between the, how many were at the time?
Well, 13.
13.
Well, New York keeps abstaining, so.
Yeah. He doesn't want
that. Courteously.
Yeah. Yeah. Courteously. And how do you guys kind of portray that element?
Because, well, I'm really excited about it. We took a different approach. We're performing in a really fun space. We're in Mary's Attic, which is in Andersonville.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you guys have been there. They redid it recently. It's just, they really made it much more inviting for full theater companies to do full theater work, not just cabarets and burlesque.
Nice.
Not to say that cabarets and burlesque are not awesome, but it's nice to have the space. They got new lighting, broader stage space, and then they put the bar in the way back, so it's not in the middle of the space anymore. So it feels like a nice little small to medium-sized venue.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've done to make it feel, immersive and also relevant is that we are not necessarily set in a colonial time period. Our clothing is more modern. You're in a more modern space, and the show is done all around you. So the audience actually sits with us. We call them the continental attendees. Is that what they're called?
Yeah. Oh.
And so you're
as though they've all been summoned
exactly.
to hear
so you've been
this
called
argument.
Here to be part of this situation that we're in.
Oh.
It's done a little bit more like panto. It's done a little bit, the audience is, it's not, we're not necessarily throwing bones to the audience, but we do make them feel like they're part of the conversation. We want them to be there to kind of hold witness to it.
Right.
So you're sitting, for me, for example, I've got an audience chair directly. I could put my hand on someone's head who sits, you know, right there next to me. So it's pretty amazing. And then what we do is we try to make sure that when we make our points about what each state wants and how they pursue their own version of independence, that we call to the people who are next to us and try to get them to see it from that state's perspective. It's really,
and convince them as well.
Yeah,
right?
And, you know, convince them to kind of be on our side of the argument, you know. So it's,
that's going to be kind of rough with certain states.
Oh, it really is. Well, it really is. And that's something that, you know, we get into right now, that there's issues in this show that are not easy to talk about. They're not pleasant. It's not, we're not doing a cartoon.
Right.
You know, yeah. we're doing a show that deals with some incredibly powerful issues that are woefully still relevant now.
Sure.
So.
And what it means to be independent, what it means to have a centralized government.
Absolutely.
What it means to decide that we will sacrifice really an entire population of people, meaning slaves,
right,
and for the sake of declaring independence and getting the South on board with that.
We've had so many conversations. In fact, her character, Rutledge, deals directly with that, you know, discussing the fact that the commerce of this time period was utterly dependent upon the slave trade, and that there was no way to divorce the financial outcome of these people away from that trade. It did not, and it does not. The show never says, you know what's a good idea? Because no one thought it was a good idea, but it was absolutely intrinsic to the colonial time period for almost every major empire.
Right.
Spain and France were dealing with this at the same time, and eventually England would, of course, have to deal with it as well.
Well, and you know, the entire concept of colonialism, you know, what they were fighting against, what they were so angry about, was that they were forced to ship all these goods back to England on their backs, and yet they were doing the same thing to the slaves.
The irony was lost on nobody at the time.
Yeah.
Either,
so. Well, I mean, your character directly talks about that, you know, discussing the Allie's character directly talks about the fact that Massachusetts is not without its own sin. There's a whole song just that deals with the East Coast northern states. They may not be pro-slavery, but they are directly reaping the financial benefits mm-hmm. of sure. the slave trade. Mm-hmm. You know, and if yeah. we talk about, you know, history, it's, I think it's something that times we, I used to do a lot of, and I still do a lot of nautical history. People want to talk about piracy and how cool pirates are. I'm like, you have to understand that pirates is the part of the slave triangle, just like everybody else was part of the slave triangle. Right. It's the major commerce of it. It doesn't, you know, it goes, it doesn't make it right. It, but it does make it what it was. Mm-hmm. So.
Alexandra, in preparing for this role of Edward Rutledge, did you go into like a lot of the, you know, the time period, doing a lot of research on the history?
Yeah, I tried to research the actual character of Edward Rutledge quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
There wasn't quite as much about the slave trade directly involved with him that I could find. But yeah, just like, it's been really helpful to immerse myself directly into that world, because the song I have to sing isn't exactly pleasant. There are some difficult phrases that have to be said. But by really fully immersing myself, it's been a little easier.
What was Edward Rutledge's background in Massachusetts?
He was a lawyer, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. I just came from Philadelphia a few weeks ago, and they have like all the plaques of what their trades were, what they did for a living. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to see. And I wonder if it was what they self-proclaimed, because, you know, I think Thomas Jefferson's was like landowner or something, mm-hmm. like
farmer.
Yeah. And some of them would say, I think that Adams said he was a politician.
Yep.
And some were lawyers, some were, you know, shopkeepers. And so it was interesting to see, and I have to assume that that was what they said they were.
And think about that back in the day when you weren't identified by your degree. Where right. you said what you were, like, yeah, that's what I am. I'm a Jedi. Deal with that.
Yeah.
You know? So.
I wish there was one of those on the costume. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Jedi.
I'm a dragon trainer. Yeah. How are you?
Super Morris had some mad lightsaber skills.
So yeah. much less interesting than a landowner.
Right. Yeah.
One guy said he was a cake ninja. I don't even know what that is.
Button Gwinnett had known more about lightsaber skills, maybe he wouldn't have been killed in that bar fight.
If only.
That would be amazing. So the tell us about the catalyst for doing 1776 this year at the Edge Theater.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. the election year was around the corner. I was I had the blessings of being married to a lovely young lady 2 years ago, and this is one of her favorite shows of all time. And I was like, you know what? I like it. I've seen it. It's not like my jam.
You'd seen the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't like a fan the way that she was. And then I watched it, and I was really it was the first time seeing it with her alongside of me, really kicked in the chest by the issues. And then Hamilton blew up, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, it's the same issues.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden the election campaign went like off the rails. And I was like, we must do this show right now.
The voice
it's
sounds like in your head.
Yeah.
It was always the announcer voice in my head. It's like, we must do it. Mm-hmm. You know,
is that voice called Orion?
Yeah, it's Orion. Yeah. Orion is all the announcing, which makes sense. Yeah.
There you go.
One man.
It is. I had actually never seen it. I'm not drawn to musicals because when people just burst into songs, I find that unsettling.
I don't understand how people like you can live a life with no whimsy.
Yeah.
What's the whimsy? You know I do. I love the movie 1776.
Well, that's the thing too. It's a Pulitzer Prize winning script. There is a scene, Act 1, Scene 3, which is 40 minutes long without a song in it.
Yes.
And that's the thing too. Like, in fact, it's the only musical in Broadway history where the pit was given a walk-out break. Like, they just like leave.
That's
amazing. Then they just go have a coffee, and then they come back and they start playing the pit again, because it's as if they're like, well, we don't really need music here, do we? It completely breaks the musical theory program. You know, usually you've got very set numbers, and this is where we sing the I Wish song.
Yeah,
and this
love
is,
that.
You know, and all that. And then this is like, we're going to talk about really important things, and you just need to shut up and listen for a bit. We'll get to songs later on, you know.
And
so.
I do love that what is holding up Thomas Jefferson is that he needs his lady to come into town. So, you know, he's feeling a little pent up.
He hasn't seen his wife for 6 months. You know, he's like, listen, I got stuff to do.
Yeah, I need to write this thing. Yeah. We are talking to Orion and Alexandra from the Edge Theater. They're presenting the historical musical 1776 at Mary's Attic. That's running through from September 1st to the 17th. You can go to edgeoforion.com.
You got it.
So you made the website for the theater with your name in it.
Uh-huh.
All right, then. Edge of Orion. So just think, you know, in the stellar sense, where's the edge of Orion? And there's the website. So edgeoforion.com. And the opening night is Thursday, September 1st. That's this Thursday at 7:30. And here's a schedule. It's going to be Thursdays and Saturdays through Saturdays at 7 p.m. And tickets are $22. More with our guests when we come back after this on 720 WGN. you're listening pretty late, I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, proudly born in the United States. Joining me are comedian Nate Weatherup, ghost tour guide, and author Adam Selzer. Regular on the show, also aboard the bus that struck and nearly killed Nate Weatherup's father. Also joining us is Orion, the artistic director. Orion, your last name is Cooling?
Yeah.
I say it in a questioning way to make sure I say it correctly.
You did great.
Orion Cooling is with us. He also plays Colonel Thomas McKee, and he's also the producer of the company at Edge Theater. But it's not Edge. It's E period D period.
You got it.
G period.
Yeah. Esteem Development for Greater Expectations.
That's what I thought.
Probably.
It said for.
Yeah.
Probably.
Probably. It might be what it's called.
Never, ever.
Prove it. Prove it. I want to see it in writing.
Well, that you can see it when you go watch the show. You can see it right there.
There you go.
Can prove that one.
And Alexandra T-Cross, you prefer that the T is always addressed?
Sure.
All right, call her T-Cross at rehearsal.
T-Cross. T-Cross.
It's my shortened gangster name.
Alexandra Cross, who is playing Edward Rutledge. And where are you from originally?
Minnesota.
From Minnesota? Where, by the way, my pillows are proudly made.
Well, awesome. That much better.
I swear to God, that's
Have you seen the My Pillows company? Like, have you been there?
Yeah.
No.
You have to confirm first.
Road trip.
I wish I could say yes.
Let's please do that.
The biggest pillow fight ever.
Now, you, I asked what roles you were playing, immediately I think you're going to be either Thomas Jefferson's wife or you're going to be,
Abigail.
Abigail Adams, and he writes her a letter about her shortcomings, and she's a little bit disappointed by that. And thanks for nothing, honey.
Thanks for nothing. By the way, I made you gunpowder. Fair trade.
And I put it in your bread.
Yep.
So, tell us a little bit about, I've been in plays before where they do gender flipping or, just gender, do you call it gender blind?
Gender
do
fluid is the term.
Gender fluid sounds a little bit fun.
Yeah, isn't it?
Right,
yeah,
that's gender
a party.
Fluid. Yeah. Have you played in gender fluid roles before when people expect
no,
it?
No, I have not.
Oh.
I had to think about that one, but no, I've never done that before.
And I love that. I mean, because that is one of the things when you watch 1776 is... But it continues to be the case, by the way. Here's a bunch of old white dudes deciding everything
exactly.
for Air One.
Yeah, I know a guy who boycotted when they did it at his high school back. My parents' high school back in the 70s did it. And a friend of mine who was in class with him, said he boycotted it because there were only like two women's roles in the whole thing.
Yeah, right.
That's true. Fair.
So for anyone who ever hears me, but we had a listener get very angry at me for saying things
what?
Like old white dudes. I know. That is, I believe, a fair enough description of a portion of the population that tends to be able to have more control over the country politically and financially.
Probably.
The stats back that up pretty easily.
Yes, and I am also not. I will someday be old, and I aspire to that.
Yeah.
I will never be white nor a dude.
Oh,
so
there you go. Yeah.
Just things that strike me, and I go, and I hear voices scream in my head. So, yes.
Well, when we first thought about doing the show, it was essential. I said to the director, Melissa Crabtree, I was like, I'm not interested in seeing a whole bunch of dudes tell me a story about this. If I wanted to do that, I could just turn on the news. I could watch Canals Congress.
Right.
It's still woefully unbalanced,
you know.
But so I was really happy that she was excited about putting women into roles. And we're very fortunate to have some powerful actors come through from auditions. And we were able to land Allie for one of those pivotal roles.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That.
It's been very interesting playing a male character, especially set in this time period, because the dialogue that's written, it was written for a man set in that time. So to have these sort of like powerful opinions it's fun. Even plays nowadays aren't always written with, strong female leads with like strong opinions about really anything. So it's been a really good time being able to explore that part.
And do you now for as far as because I'm again I'm not musically talented at all. I have none of that. And so when you're doing something that's a period piece as well as it's something that you're trying to impart how important this is today. What is the rehearsal process like when it comes to the music and the drama of this?
Well, we started off doing mostly music. We just, tried to solidify that the first couple of rehearsals. So then we could really like delve into that world. So the music was like in the back of our mind. We knew what we were going to do with it.
You tackle it first.
Yeah. And then so we can really focus on our acting choices to bring to life those stories. Because what's most important about the songs is the feeling you bring to it and what you're going to impart on your audience. I mean, of course, music and notes and rhythm is important too, but...
Yeah, but the song should continue the narrative. The show should not stop for the song.
Right.
The song should be an active part of the show.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, and that's why I often would be sort of kind of set off when someone just erupts into song for the sake of singing.
And the modern musical is that. I mean, yes. Their modern musical is especially conditioned to sell albums. It's meant to drive product, you know. And that
I have whimsy, Nate.
Yeah.
Weather Up, I can have whimsy.
Probably.
Yeah. And it really depends. There are still, of course, shows like, you know, there has not been a like release of a track from Hamilton because the show is driven story first, even though the tracks could be very right. I really thought the Olympics would pull one or two of those songs and like
I
throw them
so
in
too.
There.
True. Yeah, you know? I really thought so.
But you know, this show is similar to that in so many ways. Obviously subject matter.
Yes.
But it's not about writing that catchy hit song. It is about so two things happen when a show reaches a emotional zenith. It's either going to be a gigantic fight scene or it's going to be song. And in West Side Story, it's both.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, it's supposed to be like this peak of human experience. And that's when we translate into music. That's what we can't just do with a monologue anymore. So.
And you have obviously these conflicting ideals. You have these men who, you know, in some instance, for most of the part, saying that this is what my colony wants. This is what the people I represent want. And then you do have a couple who are like, sometimes I have to decide what is actually best for them, regardless of what they want.
Yep.
That's what I think is super interesting about the representative from Georgia. He comes in very on the fence. I'm trying to sway him over to the loyalist side, but he has a line specifically that says, I don't know if being here is more about representing my ideas or representing the people. Like, what's...
Yes.
Do I know what's best or do they?
Well, and that's, I think that continues to be the case when you go to the polling booth, right? Mm-hmm. Is, are they going to reflect what I want or do I have enough faith in this person to do what's best?
What does Adams talk about? He talks about determination. Is that mm-hmm. the big word he keys into over and over and over again? He talks about
how
when you set that path and you say, listen, I know what is right. You elected me to this position, and
trust
I'm going to pursue it, even if you don't like my point of view, even if you don't like how I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. I have a belief that I can follow this through. Now, of course, that's also how we get into major conflicts as well, right. You know. But there is something to be said about someone with that kind of willpower. Adam spends the entire show being disliked.
Obnoxious.
No, he was severely disliked.
Yeah.
And I love him for it.
And he's the protagonist of the show. And he's the guy that you're kind of following. And he's somebody who you kind of want to uppercut.
He was kind of a jerk.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, too.
And he was open about it, too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, he was not interested in playing the game, mm-hmm. you know. Mm. And I think that there are a few people. I think that's pivotal to the current conversation we're having in politics. All three major heavy hitters have all been like, I'm not playing the game. I'm going to do this thing. I'm super aggressive, right? From Trump to Clinton, to even to Bernie, say, I'm breaking the system. I'm doing this now. I mean, talking about the first person to really, truly do that in our country. That's Adams, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing about being wanting to lead is at some point, a lot of these people didn't have to keep showing up. Right. They could have not run. They could have, you know, whether it was a property or going back to their whatever other profession.
Yeah, a lot were taking their lives in their hands. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They
well,
all
that's
be
the thing
right.
Too.
Yes.
Yeah. They're all gentry. They all most everybody came from some position of power or wealth.
Right.
And they made a choice to sacrifice literally our lives, our honor.
Yeah.
For this. Like when it comes down to it. This is we can die here for this
because once they sign the document, mm-hmm. they've signed their own
death warrant for England. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, and then you know, I don't want to give away too much, but it did happen some time ago in history. Everybody that but the British come right, and New York falls, and then I mean, all hell breaks loose.
Well, that's
you know, it happens at the end of the show. Like we do this, and then the thunder breaks, and it's not like celebration tap dance time.
It's here we go.
Here we are.
Strap
you know, there's a
in.
Line talking about we're about to sail the ocean in a sea in a ship made of paper. Mm-hmm. You know,
ooh,
like this document is really what we have harnessed our entire creativity. Our entire world is just on this little declaration, which we just butchered for 4 days.
Yep.
Hopefully, there's not any more holes in it. You know, hopefully, it can keep us afloat. And the fact of the matter is, we're talking about this a lot. It was a time where real people who were sweaty and angry and confused did their best for the people that they were serving. They weren't gods. They didn't think of themselves as heroes.
Right.
They were just simply people doing what they believe was right. And they weren't interested in history to a degree. In fact, some of them were really trying to avoid history. You
clearly, because there's some of that stuff.
And a lot of them were pretty sure they were going to lose.
Absolutely.
Like, most of them went, this isn't going to work, but it needs to be said. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And so they just kind of went, it's not that I might die. I'm going to. Yeah. But I'm still doing it anyway.
Well, and the other thing that keeps also throughout the play and the story of 1776 are the letters from George Washington and the updates from the general and how the sort of impact that has from moment to moment.
I have a line that says that the man could depress a hyena.
Yeah.
You know, so it's they're very sober. They're very somber letters.
Yes.
I love those moments.
Oh, they're so good. They're so good.
Because it takes, even when you're watching the movie, and I don't know how this was done, but and I can't put my finger on it, but you feel all the air go out of your own room when you're watching it on television. You're like, not another letter from Washington.
And I think to me that's the one of the real cool things about the show. I don't know, Allie, you can maybe voice your opinion on this, but like you just see the odds over and over again. This will not work. This can't work.
Even though
this
know.
This can't work. And we're sitting here in a society that was created by this working. We're like, oh no, they're all going to die. And they can't agree with each other. And that's it for us, guys, you know? So
yeah, you buy in. I can't wait to take my son and my family to go see this.
It's super solid.
We are keeping you because I know that you mentioned a couple other things that we want to talk about.
Sure.
So we have a conversation to continue with the folks from the Edge Theater, EDGE. And we'll talk about what that stands for with Orion Cooling and Alexander Cross. We also have comedian Nate Weatherup and Adam Selzer, who cosmically came together, even though I know Adam Selzer really tried very hard to make sure your father was not struck by a bus, and we shall all carry that to our graves.
Right, exactly.
Knowing that there was somebody on the bus looking out for your dad, person.
There's a guy. There's a guy there.
Look out for that guy. Look out for that guy. I shouted it and he shouted it. He was too busy talking about the competition. And
more
his
about
need for water.
All of that when we come back. It's time now for our news. Here with everything you need to know is Rob Martin. Oh, wait, let me say this before, because people who might be wanting, you know, maybe you're drifting off and you didn't get the information. I want to make sure that you know that 1776 opens this Thursday at 7:30. The theater Mary's Attic is at 5400 North Clark Avenue, and the shows will be on Thursdays through Saturdays at 7 p.m. Tickets are $22, and you can buy them at edgeoforion.com. More about that when we come back on 720 WGN. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio with my guests, comedian Nate Weatherup and writer, ghost tour guide, historian Adam Selzer. Hello. And we have from the Edge Theater, Orion Cooling and Alexander Cross. We're talking about their production of 1776, also working on who we're going to call for the pretty late wake-up call. And I think we're going to go with a legislator, because it seems fitting.
I think it works quite well in there.
Yeah, I think that it does. It fits very well, especially with what's... I've sat in the press box for arguments on the floor of the House and the Senate in Illinois. So when I was watching 1776, I'm like, it is just like this. They're still maddening people in there.
It really is true. I think one thing Alan and I are talking about, we play characters who are diametrically opposed. I'm a patriot, as it were, to make it broad strokes. She's a loyalist, broadly. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is, I think maybe something that's maybe perhaps missing nowadays is that there's a phenomenal amount of restraint in the dialogue between opposing sides in this show. There was a time period where maybe politicians didn't immediately slip to the lowest common denominator and really rip each other to shreds. They actually said, you know, listen, I may not agree with you, but I will treat you with respect.
Well, they still say with all due respect.
But then they don't do any of that.
No, it's mostly like, I'm going to show you no respect whatsoever. Right. I'm going to be as ugly as possible.
And then I'm going to say horrendous things to you about you off, you know, over here, and then you just got to deal with that. I'm not saying that we should bring back dueling, guys, but maybe.
Well, did you see the governor of Maine say that he wanted to? He wished that dueling was still acceptable when he left that voicemail for a rep. Oh, let's not even get into what's going on.
The governor, when I was in Georgia, did something like that. He was a Democratic governor, but he spoke at the Republican convention and then challenged. I think it was Chris Matthews. He challenged to a duel afterwards.
See, I think here's the deal. I think we should, if it was a duel with something kind of fun, like Nerf weapons, like they could LARP at each other for a bit.
Yeah,
Who wouldn't we? We'd love to see that, wouldn't we?
Yeah,
that'd be good times.
Right. That would be the definitive argument ender.
Yeah.
Right there.
There it is. Who won the LARP fight?
The LARP.
Let's bring back LARPing.
Let's roll some dice.
Yeah, exactly.
I got +12 protection against talk show hosts like you.
Well, and that's the thing, too. If you think about 1770, what was going on during colonial America and how long it took for news to get someplace.
Yeah.
And how, you know, it's sort of, that's the part that is hard to wrap your mind around, too, when you're sitting there and you have to ask everyone to turn off their phones. And by the way, I want to invite invite you guys back to do a cast wrap party.
You bet.
When you're done with this production, and we'll get food and drink and have everybody, as many people as you want to come
That'd
in, we'll
blast.
Rotate them in and talk about what happened during the run of the show.
You bet.
Because we did that with the Gift Theater, and like there are moments where, and because you are kind of wrapping in the audience a little bit, you're going to have some things that, and none of the cast members actually will see sometimes that one person experiences.
Absolutely. I think this is like a, a great time.
Yeah. Yellow Secrets.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And so then this lady said this to me right before I had to sing my song. And I was like, what?
Yeah. And then this woman grabbed me and said, made me sit on her lap. We are talking about the production of 1776, which opens this Thursday at 7:30. And it's going to be at Mary's Attic, 5400 North Clark. Give people an idea what the cross street is there, because I'm bad with numbers.
That's Clark and Bryn Mawr. Clark and Berwyn.
It's, yes.
It's actually Balmoral.
It's a Balmoral, yeah.
Oh, it's all the bees.
I used to live across the street from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There it is. It's in Andersonville. It's a great neighborhood. You go up there and get yourself some dinner and just hang out. You know? Swing by the bookstore.
It's purple. Did you say
it's bright purple outside?
All right. Go to the purple theater.
Yeah. I like it because there's really great drag shows in the both upstairs and downstairs. Yep. And when we first started doing shows here years ago, a lot of the young people I work with, because part of what we do is working with educational programming, had never ever been around a drag queen before. I'm like, guess what? This is how it is. Enjoy. Come for drag bingo. And the kids
drag
like,
bingo
is, awesome.
Is the most fun thing.
It
I
is
used
a blast.
To go there all the time.
It's a blast. Absolutely.
Yeah. I have to go to drag bingo. Oh, why have we not gone to drag bingo? Adam Selzer, are there any hauntings in that area in Andersonville?
I'm sure there probably are.
Oh, well, it's the Costello Theater, which is what Brown Elephant is.
You never find an old theater that isn't supposed to be haunted.
Absolutely.
Part of this is because if you ask a theater person to tell you a ghost story, they'll do it.
That's so true.
Alexandra, have you had any ghost experiences?
I have. Not in Chicago, though.
Wait. What do you mean not? That implies somewhere else.
Well, I had a theater I worked at in South Dakota had some spooky happenings.
What?
They're usually all around.
Oh, Ryan, you as well?
Oh, yeah. I lead ghost tours, too. So, yeah. Yeah.
In Northern Michigan. Fight!
Yeah. No. I own his book. I've been on his tour. He's marvelous. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah. This is a big weird love
fest.
There are
a lot of connections here.
There are a lot of connections. Yes.
We're all friends.
Has anybody else run over my dad with anything?
No. Oh, no, I didn't do that.
No, but I didn't want to tell you here, but
I have a tandem bicycle. We can make this happen.
Yeah. Why were you doing theater in South Dakota?
I used to work there for Summer Stock Theater, Preparatory Theater.
And where in South Dakota?
It's in a big Brookings.
I don't know if I've been to Aberdeen. I don't know if I've been to Brookings.
Most people haven't.
I don't think that Mueller booked anything in Brookings.
How do they keep Summerstock running in
it's
Brookings?
It's a college town.
Okay.
And it's pretty close to the biggest town in the state, Sioux Falls. It's like an hour from there. So.
Oh, that makes sense.
I've done Sioux Falls.
Me too.
Been there.
And Sioux City. Yep. It's, you got to do the Sioux. Once you do one Sioux, you do the other Sioux.
Well, then you got to swing by Sioux St. Marie, Michigan.
Yeah, I've done that as well. Because
also done that, yeah.
Go ahead, name a small town.
With a Sioux in it, and see if I've been there or not.
Yeah, although it's spelled differently, that's the hard part.
True.
Yeah,
it's
S-A-U-L-T. Yeah. Yes, exactly. So tell us a little bit about the Edge Theater.
I would love to.
Yes,
this is our 10th year anniversary, actually. We're doing
Happy
this our decade, guys, and so it's pretty exciting. We have three wings that we work with. We have our homeschool and unschool wing. So I'm not a person who does well in a classroom. I'm hyperactive, and I like to get out of my seat and
run
around.
Ghost tour and tall ships. And also producer.
Yeah.
And
surprising. Yeah. I don't learn in a typical way. And so homeschooling was a big part of my life. And then so we do that. We homeschool, unschool wing, which is pretty awesome. And then we have a really important wing. It's called the Constellation Project. And this is a project. This is our 10th year for this as well. And we do gigantic theater, musical pieces primarily, with special needs population. And our programming is a little bit different than most special needs programming in the area in that we're not a buddy system per se. So what I mean by that is that most, if you go to see a show that has a special needs programming, usually you'll see a 1-to-1 ratio with a typically functioning actor on stage helping out someone who's got special needs. That's not what we do. What we do is we ask everybody to do the best work that they can personally do, and we'll support them as unobtrusively as possible. Mm-hmm. We've been doing this again for 10 years now. When we do a show right now, we're just casting Lion King Jr. right now. So our big show for this year. We have also another program coming, Jungle Books, around the corner. So we have two different huge musical programs right now. And Lion King has 60 kids in it, of which 40 have special, no wait, 35 have special needs. The rest are typically functioning. And the goal isn't so much to build a harbor or a safe place. Our goal is to build a community.
Right.
And by the time you finish watching a show, you can't see the differences between who is typically functioning and what child has special needs. You just see people doing great work together.
That's
and
awesome.
That to foster an environment where these friendships can continue outside of the rehearsal environment. So what's really cool about, we've been around long enough that the kids who were with me 10 years ago are now adults. And so what's really, Garrett Anderson is currently in my production. He auditioned just like everybody else and rocked it just like everybody else. And he happens to have played several roles for me as I directed him on stage when he was younger. And he's played Edna in Hairspray. He's done Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof. Mm-hmm. Huge, huge roles. And now he's in the show right alongside of us and he's rocking it. He's a great actor. And I think the cool thing about what we're doing is we've been around long enough to kind of manifest our vision. We wanted to create, again, a community in which people are seen for what they can do, not for what they can't do, and where people ask them to be part of the group, not just an auxiliary, like, something they bring along and drag along as a token that they're part of it. And this is happening. And it's happening right now because the universe has given us a chance to manifest our vision.
I apologize that I spun around and was it Nate because I have a line in
if you were trying to find one more connection to Meg in this show.
Because I have my son almost didn't survive child when he was born, and I was told there were like the list of things he would never do. He might never walk. He might never talk. He might never progress past the intellectual ability of a 2-year-old. So when I would lie in the dark and try to imagine that life, I struggled very hard. So one of the things that came to me when I picked up Declan and he was crying one night, I realized I was living there. I was living in all the things that he couldn't do, and I was living in the never. And mm-hmm. It's an impossible place to live. But I only felt better when I was holding him, and it was when I realized that I had to stop worrying about all the things he couldn't do and love all the things he could do. And that's exactly what you just said.
Absolutely.
So I got the chills and it's we're all freaking out in the studio. Yeah. But I've been saying that for years and I try to tell people, and that's hard to impart in the work that you do. For some people, you know, will think, oh, they just make it easier. And so I don't know how did this come to you to create this environment for people?
Well, that's a good question. Part of it was by training and part of it was by the willingness to learn. And then a bit of desire to do something different. I was working, I coached in Essex for a decade.
Of course you did. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, because, you know, I'm also a stuntman, which is true. But I was out there and I was asked to stay at a gym longer. I was bouncing from gym to gym because I was just traveling around the nation. And they said, how do we keep you around longer? And this is over in Hanover Park at Gymkhana. And I said, build me a theater. And this, they helped adapt one of the gyms into a theater. And then I started getting restless again. They said, how do we keep you around longer? I said, I need to make a difference in the community. And so they started hooking up. Mike Buckley knew connections from Kiwanis and Knights of Columbus. And he said, I got put some feelers out there. And I met this amazing lady from Ups or Downs, United Parents Support for Down Syndrome out of Schaumburg, and she had this huge population of young people who wanted to do something new and exciting and different. And we just sat down in the preschool gym. We're supposed to be there for 20 minutes, having a cup of coffee. 3 hours later, we're still bouncing up and down, so excited about the possibility of putting together a theater company and having these goals of inclusion rather than separation or it's not, again, it's a little bit different because there had been, and there still is, really wonderful special needs theater programming. There's nothing wrong with that, but our ideas were different. And we started jamming out about this, and all of a sudden it kind of happened. But along the way, we had to learn on the fly. We had to learn what was going to work, what was not going to work. We had to fail as many times as we succeeded. And we learned that bit by bit, the ratio changed. Well, how many teachers do I need? What qualifications do I need these teachers to have? We made a choice to not use traditionally licensed therapists at the beginning because I didn't want the... I didn't want their training of conditioning how they should be looking at their subjects to influence what we were doing. When you have trained in a certain way, sometimes you expect a certain thing from the young people. What I wanted everyone to expect was the absolute best from every young person. I wanted to find...
And right, because a licensed therapist sees the limitations.
Right. And that is
the prognosis. Kinda, that
exactly.
Kind of thing, right.
Right. And so I wanted them to see the kid first, not the prognosis. And I wanted them to demand excellence from the child. And what we do with this is that I this is what I hope to do every time, is I find exactly where your limitations are, and I will hold you there, and I will demand from you your best. And you don't get to give me anything but your best. And that's a little bit different than some other programs.
Right, because we tend to think, and this happens even with the parents, with mm-hmm. with Declan, we'll think, oh, you know, we kind of lower our guard or lower our, like, you know, we just don't maintain. And, mm-hmm. and we forget that he has a personality,
yes.
that he has stubbornness. He has, you know, all these different, even though he's not verbal, you know, we act as though, you know, we learn to expect less sometimes.
Right.
And we're not raising the bar every time, which it sounds like what you're doing.
We try to. We meet these actors years. I've got some actors who have been in my program for a full 10 years now. And every year I get to see progress and growth in them, which is something that I think most teachers, I have a classroom that's been around for 10 years. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You don't get that. You get to say, you know, your fourth grade teacher, you say goodbye to your kids every year. I get to say hello to my kids. And every year they come back and play uh-huh. some more. And the community grows and gets more diverse. And we see different people and different abilities. And we're really jazzed right now because though we primarily have been known for our work in the field of Down syndrome, we have new programs with all kinds of different people coming through. And it's just so, it's so exciting and so new for us. And some of these challenges are things we've never dealt with before. And like, well, let's sit down and figure this out. We didn't always have the answers for these things either. Let's figure out what we can do here. And so, yeah, a lot of it's about us letting people take the stage, letting them have the power, about making sure that if we use a supportive structure, that the narrative's not about the supportive structure, but the narrative's about the kid's journey, and that we're journey-based, not outcome-based. I don't care about the show at all. I care about the journey to get to the show.
All right. Oh, wow. Fantastic. And how can people find out more about getting their
kids
involved?
Oh, it's so awesome. Yeah. You can just jump on the website, edgeoforion.com. Take a look at the Constellation Project. It's one of the buttons on the main webpage. And there's a video about what we do, how we do. And if you want to see us in action, come watch Garrett Anderson. He'll blow your mind because that guy is... It's just incredible. He's a wonderful actor.
Well, for everything of the Edge Theater, go to edgeoforion.com. Let's find out who we're calling. We're going to call a legislator when we come back. Alexander, I want to talk to you more. And he talks faster than I do.
Sorry.
Which is a comfortable place for me.
It's actually been fun for me to watch because I've never seen Patty just like, oh, wow.
Yeah. What? Talk, what? We'll hear for a moment before we go to a break. Alexander, what brought you to Chicago?
I moved here because of my theater degree. Since I grew up in Minnesota, I could either move to the Twin Cities, I figured, or to Chicago. And Chicago is a little more of an adventure, so mm-hmm. that's where I headed.
And how do you feel about our city?
Love it.
Oh.
Love it.
And how long have you been working with it? Is this one of your first productions?
This is my second with Edge. I worked with them last November mm-hmm. as well, so almost a year.
Yeah, and how long have you been? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, we were fortunate to have her. We did a show called Holmes versus Holmes, which was a what if Sherlock Holmes helped to hunt down H.H. Holmes.
And okay.
It was fascinating. Yeah,
nice. Yeah. I have a book about him coming out in about 6 months.
Awesome.
And wow. Every other book about him is completely inaccurate.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was no murder castle.
Oh, okay. Fascinating. I can't wait to hear more about that.
Media made it up.
Nice.
Well, the police made it up and the media ran with it.
Fantastic.
And how long have you been in Chicago?
2 years.
2 years. And now, what part of the city are you living in?
Is Lincoln close? Square.
Oh, see? It's the best part of the city.
I love it.
Sorry, everybody. I love my neighborhood, too, but... Yes. What?
I used to live there. How many connections?
All the
Can we just meet up for coffee like once a month?
Let's do it. Yeah.
But the important question is, have you had Jet's Pizza?
No.
All right, then. So
well,
there you go.
We know what we're doing All right. tomorrow.
Plans made.
Let's see who we're calling when we come back on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN.